You got to go in and tune it up underneath the campaign. Not just say, hey, this campaign's making two ROAS. I'm going to spend more here. Go in and see if one of the ad sets is outperforming the others. And are there any ads within that ad set that's really resonating? Because that's the message to the market based on the strategy.
Welcome to the All About Digital Marketing Podcast, the show that dives into the best strategies, tactics, and tools for entrepreneurs and marketers looking to exponentially increase their results online. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the All About Digital Marketing Podcast. I'm here as your co-host today, and I'm with Travis Ketchum, but we are joined today by Scott Desgrossiers from Wicked Reports. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great now that someone knows how to say my name so eloquently.
No matter how many podcast episodes you ever do, Scott, we expect the Hall of Fame award for the name pronunciation.
My French accent finally came in useful.
You can't top that. That is untoppable. Someone maybe can meet that bar. That's it.
Super happy to have you here, man. I've known you for years and it's about time we get you on a podcast that I'm on. So this is awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I was saying before when we were chatting, my wife's like, you know, you can roll out of bed and talk about marketing attribution. I was like, I don't think that's a compliment, but it is going to bode well for today on the podcast. So,
well, you know, being the CEO of Wicked Reports, you kind of have to be able to do that, right? Like that's your lane and that's what you really, gone into head first. And we live in a world now where attribution is getting harder and harder, don't you think?
Yeah, nothing that anyone is doing in terms of the ad platforms or the CRMs or the shopping carts or privacy is making attribution any easier. And everything that any ad platform does is designed to make you spend more. And that's about it. Regardless of what they might say, their values are or what have you, they just want more money spent on the platform. So, you know, relying on them for tracking is the fox watching the hen house. You know, they just want more money in. So it's a murky landscape, but you know, where there's great, you know, risk, there's great opportunity too. So
do you want to go ahead and give us kind of what your idea of marketing, you know, marketing attribution is, what Wicked Reports really core competency is, and then we can talk about some exciting new stuff you're doing to help break new ground on attribution in general as the landscape is rapidly evolving.
Sure. So Wicked Reports, you know, we solely focus on marketing attribution. There's a lot of other tools out there now that it's a buzzword and a category, you know, say, hey, we do attribution, and they may throw it in as a little add-on or, you know, something they cobble together real quick. I've been doing this for 10 years, patents pending, it's somewhat of an obsession. And, you know, we started with the idea of provable first-party data attribution back in 2013. And it all started with a friend of mine who sells lobsters online. And he had said, hey, Facebook sucks for lobster, was his quote. And I said, why is that? He goes, I just blew my whole marketing budget, which at the time was $4,000. I got 12,000 clicks. I only made one sale. I just lost my shirt for the month. And he was very stressed out. And I was like, you know, you're some random lobster guy. People see an ad, they're not just going to be hypnotized into buying immediately. It's going to be like you got to warm them up, you know, all this other marketing strategy. But he's like, well, how am I going to know what worked? And I just assumed there was a lot of stuff out there. And I was, you know, at the time I was running the databases at apartments.com. And I also was moonlighting with him and a few others, just, you know, IT guys always have a side hustle. And so I was like, geez, I'll set up some software for you. And there was nothing. So we hacked together this idea that I was going to test on whether his tracking would lead to value over time. Cause not that it's some, you know, earth shattering revelation, but I was like, you have an expensive product. No one knows who you are. It's going to take time to ROI is my opinion. Even though e-commerce people right now get in there and try to day trade their account same day, like there's some fancy traders, which is not the thing to do. We'll get into that. But so we had this theory, people that like the Red Sox or the Patriots. I don't know if you know this, Chris, is a more European dude, but those are New England centric sports teams. And people either really like our teams or, you know, like any league, or they really can't stand us. And so we're like, hey, if people like these teams but don't live in the area, they're likely nostalgic for the food, and lobster's a very New England-centric food. Let's try and see if that's going to work. So that was the strategy. And then the way that we had to track at the time was, you're going to click, we're going to have this big long string of text. I'm going to shove it into some database somewhere and then do all these spreadsheets to figure out, did these people ever buy? Because one thing this guy did really well is he emails like 3-4 times a week, and they're really fun emails. Email all the time. And so that already was a multi-channel strategy. This is back 10 years ago. You know, it wasn't always just like, I'm going to throw a ton of money at Facebook and just hope I'm making money the same day, same amount of money I spent each day. It was this deliberate, I need people on my list because I'm good at emailing. So he does this, and, you know, he spends $5,000 and he breaks even in about a month. But then we kept tracking in the sales every day, tracking down, you know, who's buying, where the heck did they come from? And lo and behold, he actually made 10-to-1 on his money over 3 months. There just was delayed conversion time. And that origin story I tell at the beginning, because that still is what happens in Facebook, and people still don't exploit it enough. The ones that do are the ones that win on paid ads. But the concept of different channels, and Facebook in particular, because it's so challenging and so popular, we can talk about that, but it matters for every platform. There's a delay in time. The buyers don't always see an ad and just, oh my God, I gotta buy. I mean, granted, deadline timers and other great hooks can do that. But people are gonna buy in their own time frame. There's tons of customer journeys. You know, people can take like weeks and weeks to buy, unfortunately. But when they do, knowing where they came from, so you can, you know, reassess how good that channel is a powerful advantage if you have the data and know what to do with it.
I just want to point out, as a West Coaster, that the fact that your SaaS company's origin story is still about lobster is about the most East Coast thing I could think of.
And the Patriots and the Red Sox. Yeah,
and the Patriots.
When I was going to pick a domain name, I was going to be in traffic. We were going to the Infusionsoft, used to have these, now called Keat, InfusionCon. And I was like, I had all these data e names, and I was debating, and I was like, too lame. And I was like, I got to go Wicked Reports. And once I thought of it, nothing else was going to do. And so I printed out shirts, and we went in. That was back when Digital Marketer was a smaller company, and they would have their own little booth. And I went up and pitched Ryan Dice on tracking their ads. And then they were like our 10th customer. It turns out it worked out pretty good. So
that's amazing.
You mentioned a couple of things there. So I think for a lot of people listening, the idea of attribution and what we're calling this, even the basics of understanding where your traffic is coming from to your website, where your consumers and the people are actually buying from, can be quite confusing. And I think one of the hardest things for people to understand is actually Google Analytics. And I'm saying this because for us, if you've been in this game for a long time, anything to do with data, the analytics behind what happens, how it happens, where it happened is super important. But for a lot of smaller businesses and businesses that are still building up, they don't necessarily use those tools in a great way. But recently there's been some big changes, hasn't there, for Google? And it's becoming harder, as far as I can tell, and I'm someone that's used some of these tools for a long time, but it's becoming harder and harder to actually understand where your consumers are coming from, where your customers are coming from. Can you talk a little bit about that, Scott?
Sure. So Google Analytics 4 coming out, big push by Google. You know, they're deprecating any other versions of Google Analytics, I think in July, which we've marked on our calendars because we're very excited about it. And so smaller brands and bigger brands all use Google Analytics for various reasons. But one thing the bigger brands do, I don't know if the smaller ones do, is you can upload your orders and Google will report back information about what made that sale at the order ID level. And that's nice because it helps build trust. And it may or may not be that accurate. You know, Google has, you know, you think Google, they can do anything, but they have their own motivations for what they're trying to report. But that ability is going away. So anyone that's currently relying on Google for last touch, meaning what closed the sale, last touch is the idea there's a customer journey and the last thing is what made them buy. So just do more of that. And then you're going to get more sales because that's what finally closed them. And I used to think that when I first started out, and I no longer think that now. But from looking at, you know, billions and billions of ad spend, you see trends and you see these patterns. And the patterns are not that the last thing that happened is the most important thing. It's one of many, few to many steps that you need to focus on. So that change is going to remove the transparency of what is driving the sales, which is tough. And then Google Ads themselves are removing most attribution models, in particular first click, which was surprising because Google gets a lot of first click. And linear, which is the idea of taking every touch point you know about and sharing the revenue credit among all the points, which sometimes is a useful model, depending on what you're trying to do. We'll get into how you pick which model later, what my opinion is anyway. And they're just going to have what's called data-driven attribution, which means behind the scenes, there's a Google black box that knows better than you what you should do, and it's going to tell you what you should do. Now, I don't like black boxes. I'm an honest, transparent person about everything, so I already don't like that. Even if it is good, I don't like it because it's not transparent. But also the motivation is, well, Google Ads showed 6% more conversions using this model. So we're going to move everyone to that. Now that already is puzzling. Like, okay, yeah, you want more conversions, but why not show where in the journey so you can architect your reverse engineer how you're going to acquire more customers? And so Facebook had an attribution tool come out and it was like, oh no, Wicker Reports, you're in trouble. And a lot of stuff mirrored ours. I used to fly out there for their accelerators, talk to all their people. Then they came out with something that looked kind of like ours. And I was like wildly upset, even though maybe it had nothing to do with it. I don't know. And then they ended up canceling it because I was like, you know what? I'll be worried if they actually say, don't spend on Facebook, go spend on Google and Snap and TikTok, which they never did. The tool was designed not to tell you the truth, so it wasn't useful and it ended up canceling. So getting back to Google, those two things are, you know, those are pretty big changes because if you're someone who likes to advertise to cold traffic, which is brand new audiences, and then trigger all these retargeting elements or other strategies, and then when the sale occurs, you want to say, hey, where did this customer first hear about me? That's the purpose of first click. And Google Ads is doing away with it. So you're just going to have to rely on the black box, which isn't good enough.
Unless you use a tool like yours, right?
Exactly. That's why I was on a podcast where I was like, this is pretty exciting. This is great news.
That's a pretty big shift for sure. I mean, because I think about, you know, the affiliate world, which I had a lot of years in. It always used to be kind of frustrating when it would be last click attribution who got the sale, right? Because we all know that just because, you know, an email tips someone over the edge or a specific review page tips someone over the edge or a bonus page, right? It's like, that's not what actually built up the desire to buy or convinced them to buy. They were looking for the last reason to remove the last layer of doubt. And it's kind of tough, right? Because in the affiliate world, like that's still valuable because they still click through and they did buy, but someone else may have done the heavy lifting and someone else got the commission, right? Those two things might be separated. So you could have someone that's an amazing storyteller and builds the desire and agitates the pain, all these other marketing concepts we understand. And then someone else is good at getting a page to SEO and say, don't buy XYZ product until you read this review and we'll give you some crappy bonus. Like, oh, I can get something extra if I buy through you. Click. Commission goes to the person that did very little to actually build up and make that conversion a reality. So it's complicated.
Exactly. And furthermore, anyone that goes into Google Analytics and you see a lot of direct conversions, which you always do, and then you see branded search, and ideally you see email and SMS, those close a ton, particularly in e-commerce. They had to come from, all those had to come from somewhere else by definition, unless you're like a household brand. So any type of domain that's doing, you know, even, you know, I don't know what anyone considers big or small. We see all kinds of sizes. Let's say you're a $20 million business. You're still not a household name. Not many people know about you. No one just woke up one day like the lobster guy. No one woke up and said, I have to go to getmainlobster.com and buy lobster tails. they had to know about him from some other channel to then close on those channels that Google Analytics is reporting. And so that, I mean, think of all the YouTube videos going on. Well, YouTube is a great top of the funnel, and then Facebook retargeting, and then email, SMS, or direct close. That's a common chain of channels.
This actually kind of reminds me of an interesting thing that came up actually in AI models recently, where they were trying to train AI models to identify like cancerous or problematic skin portions by photos of skin. What they realize is that all the photos that had a cancerous or problematic portion of the skin also had a ruler in the picture. And so if you just put a ruler in the picture next to healthy skin, it had a high probability of saying it would be unhealthy skin, right? So it's like correlation and causation were not properly identified in that, because it was saying, oh, I see this thing. And then, you know, in your case or your example, it could be the email or SMS or whatever the last touch thing is, and think like, oh, this is where we got to put all of our weight, but it may be undervaluing the 98% of work that happened to get them on your list, educate them, indoctrinate them to your story, build desire. And then that last touch thing happened.
Definitely. I mean, that's why with attribution models, I always think, you know, it depends. The model to pick depends on the intention of the particular thing you're measuring. It's almost like, hey, if you're measuring height, you need a ruler. If you're measuring weight, you need a scale. Well, attribution models are similar. If you're measuring top of the funnel, and it really mirrors your marketing funnel, kind of overlays with your attribution. That's why we have something called funnel vision we'll talk about, overlays it automatically. Because how you're measuring brand new eyeballs is much different than how you're measuring people that have been on your email list for a year. They're going to respond differently. Everyone says, I'll match the message to the market at the right time. Everybody says that. No one in attribution really, what exactly do you do to find out if you did that right? And it's to pick the right model based on what you're trying to do, because they all measure different. It's almost like a horse with blinders on. Sometimes you want the blinders to just focus on certain areas of the journey based on whatever you were trying to do with that marketing. If you're retargeting people in your CRM, you want to use a particular type of measurement. If you're doing a flash sale, then it is last click. You're saying, hey, you know, for 3 days only, click here and save X percent, or buy one, get one, free ship, whatever you're doing.
50% of those will be in the last 4 hours.
Yeah. Then the last click's great for that, you know? But if you've got anything with a longer consideration or higher dollar value or multi-step funnel, booked calls, I'm going to talk to you. You need 3 attribution models minimum, is my opinion, if you have a book call funnel.
So I know you've had this breakthrough that you call funnel vision, which is a fun name. But I'm really interested to see how Chris, you know, chews on it from the agency perspective, because he's run an agency for a long time. I mean, we're both simultaneously young guys and also feel like, you know, you could use a sundial to measure our age. So I want to hear you talk about that. And then I'm really curious for Chris to dive in from the agency's perspective about how that's really powerful. Because of course, as any business owner, it's interesting. But when you're especially going into a new sort of customer black box about, I don't know, we get sales, where do they come from? And how you could actually apply the breakthrough that you've had to not only their own business, but to client businesses. So if you want to start by explaining your funnel vision, that'd be amazing.
I'd love to, because we've realized that our ICP is not what's on our website, which puts me like, you know, a fair amount of other business owners, but it's also, you know, somewhat an embarrassing revelation. I was like, agencies are the ones that love our stuff now. What's that?
Just people that are listening. ICP, we love our acronyms in the marketing world. Ideal customer profile. Just want to pin that one on the board.
So we realize our ideal customer profile is an agency owner, and the media buyers that work for that agency owner is actually the people that we help the best. I mean, we do have some brands that are raving fans and our software works great for them too. But if we had to pick an exact niche we're going to focus on, agency owner is the perfect use case. So we'll see if you agree, Chris, or maybe you just blow up my ICP. I'll go back to the drone board after the call here.
Based on my input, don't blow up anything, trust me. Because we spoke about this, I think, in the last episode with Travis, and I was saying we work a lot in the Web3 space, which basically means 90% of our customers have been wanting to build something and get something out, but don't actually necessarily have the product yet. So they're not necessarily in a position whereby we can match or monitor, in a simple way. Look, we did all of this and then you sold X amount of this. A lot of the time they're sort of actually targeting investors, trying to get investor meetings, etc. So we look at these things in slightly different ways. But I know for a fact, and literally had a meeting, I think last week, with somebody who was talking to me purely about this, the analytics for the data side of things, and saying they can't figure out what they should and shouldn't be spending money on. And which I think is a massive kind of worry for a lot of companies. You mentioned the guy from Maine 10 years ago, but I think, you know, fast forward 10 years, 2023, how is it possible that you spend $5,000 and you go, I don't really know what came out of that, really, to be honest with you. Like, you know, but this is the kind of conversations you end up having with smaller businesses that are still trying really hard to get into that. So explain more. Let me see how it all works.
In fairness, the old, like before the internet made things a lot more trackable, I remember, you know, when I went to college with marketing, professors used to say, yeah, old ad agencies, you know, they'd spend $10 million on a campaign. They say, yeah, half of your ad spend worked. The problem is we don't know which half.
Yeah.
the only bit that worked was the coupons. You must cut this coupon out and bring it to the store. Otherwise, you didn't know anything.
If you're JCPenney, then that works, but everyone else, you're hosed.
Yeah. A couple of things from that. You know, what we have coming out this quarter is automatic recommendations based on our scale, kill, chill framework of how we think you should act on the data. But then also the agency can put in their rules of what they would look at and how they would scale or turn down ad spend. And we'll run multiple systems and kind of bookmark, timestamp when the recommendation, or you're almost like a day trading system. It's going to say, you're actually going to have your agency ad spend optimization process on autopilot. So it'll look at, you know, whatever metrics you want, create rules, and it'll tell you what it is. Now, then if you want to have it automatically act, something great is RevealBot is a beautiful tool that will then automatically act on the stuff. But it that's our goal, because we find agency owners, I mean, one thing with the media buyers, they don't always run the process you think, or just getting them to follow the SOPs aren't always, just doesn't always pan out. And then that can cause client churn. What we found with Funnel Vision, so the idea here with as a media agency is, one is the company, you know, let's say they're doing $1 million a month. They do $1 million. Well, and they did, you go into Google Analytics and you see email, SMS, direct, branded search, bunch of the sales. Well, likely all your paid media drove those either in that month or it was previous months or old ad spend campaigns that drove those leads or drove that traffic that's now converting now. An attribution in the past would be like, well, email's getting it. Or it would do a linear approach where it'd say, oh, there was 20 touch points. The thing cost $20. Every touch point gets $1. And then those harder to earn clicks up front don't look that valuable because you had to spend on those. And then when they're familiar with the brand at the bottom, you know, it's all earned media getting the conversion. So the agencies would get screwed basically. And so we had this idea. And so Funnel Vision pulls in the CRM and the shopping cart to help create a journey using the actual client's data themselves. And then we layer that with all the paid media that we track. And we bucket it based on top, middle, or bottom of the funnel. So rather than all the hacks you have to do to try to get credit, if someone was clicked on an ad and they weren't in any of the client's data, then they're top of the funnel. If they're in the data at any customizable time window you want, then they're in the middle. And if it's right at the end, which is, you know, one day to a week or whatever you decide is the end, the bottom, then they're the bottom. So it's like this accordion. You can set this funnel of date ranges to say, hey, here's how this funnel works. And we'll automatically cross-reference all the data and bucket the spend and the results in the top, middle, or bottom. And then adding to that, whenever anyone buys, we'll look all the way back through time and add that revenue wherever it needs to go, top, middle, or bottom. And what this leads to is that 2/3 of like Facebook is usually top. And then another 20%, 15% is the middle, 15 or 20 is the bottom. Because if people are doing something on Facebook to buy, I mean, this isn't every customer is different, but a lot of them, particularly when you see a lot of email, SMS, brand search, direct, that's the bottom. In the middle is usually, or the top is usually Facebook is driving a lot of that. And so that's what we do. And then we give the agency owners talk tracks to explain it to their clients. Dedicated Slack so we can go back and forth. But also, if you've turned things off and those people now buy, you'll see, you know, $10,000 to $100,000 in credit that you can send to the client. Hey, you know, $50,000 you closed this month. That was from ad spend 3 months ago. That was us that did that. Don't forget, you're starting the day up $50,000. You're starting the month up $50,000 on what I did for you. And that helps retain people because you got to keep reinforcing your value. It's like crazy out there. People change agencies like they change their outfits. You know, it's pretty intense right now. So that's how it works.
For a lot of people, that's got to be mind-boggling as well. And I say that in the nicest possible way, and also remembering a couple of conversations I've had in the past where I've sort of asked the question stupidly or naively, thinking these guys would be well on top of it, and said, what does your sales cycle look like? Right? We're talking about lots of different models and ideas here in different companies and different ways that they do these things. But for a lot of companies that are selling a higher ticket item, there won't be a, you know, you see an advert, you close a deal. It might even involve several stages of going back and forth and having that conversation. As an agency owner, we have probably say 3-4 meetings with a client before we actually end up closing a deal. For a lot of people, they don't actually know those pieces of their own business. So I'm guessing that with these kind of tools, this is almost a bit of a revelation as well, right? That first touch to sale could be a hell of a lot longer than they originally thought, perhaps.
Yes, we have predictive behavior reports where we run historical analysis from your CRM to your cart to see how long people take to close, because they won't believe it. And we'll just say, hey, in the past, you know, because we want to create a model of expectation of how long cold traffic normally takes to close. Because otherwise you're going to get in there, you're going to run first click after like 2-3 days and be like, Wicker Reports is terrible. It's not showing many sales. And we'll be like, well, because no one's buying yet off the stuff. We can show you it all time stamped out, and you know, people just don't like, they don't like it. And so what we do now instead is we run this analysis of, well, once they got in your CRM, how long did they take until they showed up in the cart? And then we can say, hey, that, and then we bucket it all out and give you a, what's called a campaign evaluation period of, here's how long cold traffic should take, here's why. And so it's built into our frameworks of how to act on the data, is that first thing you got to do is, has it been running long enough? That's the first checkpoint. Because if it's only one day and you're looking at Funnel Vision, you better not make a decision unless you're selling like a toothbrush. Then yeah, maybe it should close in a day.
So what is kind of a normal timeline? Because I think a lot of people either don't know, or they intuitively, and for those that are listening, I'm using air quotes here, intuitively think that, oh, you know, someone hears me, they hit the website, they fill out a form and they buy, and it takes like 24 hours. But what do you find, you know, the average times are, and how elastic is that based on the price point that is being sold? I mean, I know you said like a toothbrush might be a day, right? But I would assume $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 sales might take longer. What are you finding on all of it?
Oh yeah. A lot longer. Yeah. Like our LTV in a customer could be 10 to 50K, and ours are, you know, 3 weeks plus. And we're always doing everything to speed it up, but that's just what they're going to take. The bigger the ticket, the longer they take. You get a $5,000 plus a month client coming in, it's going to be like, they'll be like, yeah, we're ready to buy, get started. We'll be like, just buy. And they'll still just like stall it out because they want to be all ready to go, have their team member, you know, the bigger the org, the more they got to be, have like their ducks in a row. That's probably why they're bigger. It takes more time, the bigger they are.
I guess you got to be an ESP to get them to buy quick when they are spending a lot of money, huh?
I don't know. Let me know what the secret is, because they take time. Like with the lobster, when the lobster guy started, we did this because all of a sudden he was like, he still would get upset. He'd launch a new campaign and 2 days in, and he'd be like whining about his ad spend. You know, I didn't manage his ad spend, but he'd just be complaining to me about whatever. I'd be like, hey, you know why Wicked Reports, you know why we have these attribution models? I go, it's because your leads take time to buy. Not like, it's not a theory, it's your actual leads. We built it originally for you, and then it expanded based on other advertisers. But his original time frame was 44 days was his average, which he hated. He like, can't be that long. It's e-commerce. I'd be like, it is. And I go through and we just say, hey, look at, here's the last 100 sales. Let's just go look at some of them when they first showed up. And he was using Infusionsoft and WooCommerce at the time. Here's your Woo orders. Here's your Infusionsoft. Here's the math of create date in Infusionsoft and order date in Woo. And that's the data. And then he whittled it down. He's got it down to in the 20s now, but it's still, so he's $200 pure e-com. It took 20 days. It's for him. We see some people that are, you know, if they're under 100, they can get down to, they try to go same day profitability, which may or may not happen based on whether the algorithm is good to them that day. And I'm like, well, you know, the conversions are delayed and modeled. So it's delayed data you're even acting on, because they'll try to, you know, shove more data in because it's going well. And sometimes that does work. Sometimes it fails miserably. It's not repeatable or consistent, so it's tricky.
So do you have a strong belief then that once you understand your sort of conversion pipeline and where your profitable sources are, where they're not, and what levers are making it all happen, is that what then gives them the data they need to be able to collapse that time? Because like the lobster example you use, you said he went from like, you know, mid 40s to more like 20s on the number of days to convert. What kind of actions did he do once he understood the pipeline and understood what was working to collapse that time essentially in half? Like how did that data inform what he did differently? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. So you use the top of the funnel attribution models to figure out what cold traffic stuff is attracting the customers the best. There's always 80-20 rule in all of this. There's, you know, you got to throw out 10 campaigns, 2 are going to be good, 8 are going to be crap, just the way it is. And then you look at the middle funnel stuff. What's converting my, you know, everyone has these huge CRMs and like 10% of them are actually customers and 90% of, you know, whatever. And so then what's actually converting these longer CRM leads and what can I do there? And then bottom of the funnel, which everyone always usually focuses on, is what sales or things have worked the best. In his case, it was always buy 6, or maybe he does a different quantity now. Buy 6, get 6 lobster tails. Just he'd be like, I'm so bored of doing this. And I'm like, are you bored of making all this money? It's what people like. Now, people on his list that have been seeing the same damn offer forever, they get sick of it. So we got to rotate new stuff in. But that thing just works. And then he has these great emails, and the emails are the same thing. I mean, most people paid media, they're just focused on that. But email and SMS, there's certain offers that work better or worse, but you got to make sure that the best emails and SMS are queued up as you get new people flowing in. They're getting the best stuff, not just the latest stuff. Now that I said that, I just realized, you know what? I need to do a reorientation of mine, because you get busy, you forget. I've been doing some stuff that I kind of like lately. And you know what? Is a lead today going to get it from Wick Reports? No, they're not, because it was like not automated yet. So we'd really hammer home that piece with them too, because we do some consulting if people want. Focus on each piece one at a time.
And so basically they're using the data to decide, okay, these are the effective things. Let's put all of our wood behind those arrows, so to speak, right? So that we're maximizing our opportunity at each touch point. Is that sort of an accurate understanding?
Yeah. So, and if you break it down just like a 3-stage funnel, top, middle, bottom, for each one, optimize, you know, keep whittling off the ones that aren't working and moving the ad spend to the ones that are. I mean, we find lots of times within campaigns, if you have like one campaign with like 3 different targets and 3 ads per target, there's little pockets in there that are the ones driving all the ROI at the campaign level. And you got to go in and tune it up underneath the campaign, not just say, hey, this campaign's making 202 ROAS, I'm going to spend more here. Go in and see if one of the ad sets is outperforming the others, likely. And are there any ads within that ad set that's really resonating? Because that's the message to the market based on the strategy. And then you move the money, rather than having to go find more money to invest, sometimes you just optimize the spend intra-campaign.
So cutting the dead weight of the small pockets within a campaign that aren't performing, and all of a sudden your 2x ROAS is 6.
Yeah, exactly. So all of a sudden your ROAS goes up and you just did a very simple click, 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 and then you made more ROAS. It's like not that tough, but you got to have the discipline to do it, to look at it periodically. So it's more a mental mindset game than a...
Well, as I like to joke, the closer you can get to click the button, make the money, the better off you are. And it sounds like you're basically there, right? Click the button, turn off the ad. Make the money.
Yeah. So we're now going to send exactly what actions. And then the next piece will be click and it happens. And then, hey, you want it on autopilot? RevealBot does that great. And we have an integration with them that we can set up to autopilot once you've vetted out. Because people have these SOPs, but there's a lot of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but the media buyers, you follow a process, you got one, that's why you got an agency, but it's just like anything. How tight is the adherence to how it's supposed to be done? I mean, maybe yours is airtight. I don't know, but that would be the first.
Absolutely not. And the worst part is also we're working with clients, and clients will push every single button they can when it comes to telling us what they want, how they want it done, where it has to go, what sort of things they want. They'll review content, copy, ads, even if the numbers prove that it's not working, and they'll continuously say, yeah, but we're not going down that route. We're sticking to this language or that language for a particular, God knows what reason. You said something really particular, like the bigger the organization, the harder it is for them to get the ducks in the row. And for me, the slower and the less likely they are to move quickly towards what actually works. And that's a big challenge. We worked recently with a company that raised like $750 million and hugely exciting, awesome tech. Can we show this? Can we show that? No. Can we talk about this? No. Cool, guys. Like, we can't give you results. Like, literally, that was the end of the conversation and the end of the contract, to be honest, because I'm like, that we're never going to move the needle where you want it, right? You're asking me to get you double the traction and double the followers, but I got to keep doing the same stuff you've been doing for 6 months that hasn't produced any kind of results. And that's a really challenging thing, I think, for a lot of agencies. And it's why I think, at least in my experience, a lot of agency owners have to maneuver within that. And I think that's also what ends up meaning that SOPs move quite quite a bit as well to try and keep those clients on board. Because otherwise you don't end up with a big agency. You fall out with everybody who's not those amazingly brilliant clients that decide they'll just trust you 100%.
My question for both of you is, how do you balance basically what customers want versus what they actually need? Because this is always an interesting debate, I feel like, whenever you have especially a unique mechanism like Funnel Vision or unique strategy when it comes to an agency. Like, you know, they usually come to you opinionated, right? Like, you're, you know, the lobster guy thought, oh, it must be much, much quicker, right? But that wasn't the case. Or, you know, you just talked about your client that had interesting tech, but you couldn't talk about it. How do you balance what they think they want versus what they actually need in order to be the level of success that they're truly looking for? Because those aren't always in alignment.
That challenge never goes away.
Well, so what are you doing to mitigate that, though? I mean, like, what?
I was hoping Scott had an answer for me, to be honest with you. I was like, that, come on, Scott, tell me how you do it.
I can give a soundbite, but it would be a lie. I don't have that. So what happens? It's like, we release Funnel Vision. Half the people are using it, happy. You know, we got a fair amount of people using our platform. Bunch of them, we have, you know, very detailed user analytics. We can't get, some people, we just can't get over there. They just like the old way. The old way is working for them. So, I mean, they're still paying us and they're getting results. So that's fine. We keep nudging them. But so what we're going to do with this automatic recommendations is we're going to build it in just to Funnel Vision, because that's what we think they should be using going forward. We think it's just better. So we're going to just innovate in the area we need them to go. But I mean, why people are using it, why you should be using it is you should be optimizing your ad spend based on what you see. Are people doing that? Sometimes they do. Sometimes they just like to verify what's going on. You know, I mean, we're a business. We'll gladly provide that service as well. But you should be making decisions based on it. So that's when we're like, okay, if I'm an agency owner and I got media buyers, what are they doing? What should they be? How can I save them headcount and time, retain the clients and get new ones? And for us, that meant one of the things was, let's on a platter tell them what to do to save them all that time of even risk of misanalyzing in a hurry. You know, they can worry about strategy and creative and other things. And we can provide the, here's what the data is telling you to do.
So your strategy is a bigger carrot.
I still don't
think
I fully answered your question because I don't have the answer. I think about it.
But it sounds like your strategy is trying to offer them a bigger carrot.
Yes. You're a good synthesizer. Very fast at that.
It's like ChatGPT, but personal one I brought along to all my podcast
GPT tease Travis.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure I could come up with a fun acronym for that, but moving on. And so Chris, so when you're talking about, you know, with your clients, obviously there's a whole suite of things that you do for your customers and clients as an agency. But if you think about in Scott's context with analytics, like, it's simultaneously people want to know what's working, so they say. Their actions sometimes aren't always in alignment with that, but they say they want to know what's working. How do you take something that's like, so black and white, right? Like, either it converted or it didn't, and it came from here or it didn't, right? Like, that's very binary. How do you take something like that that can really inform your decisions going forward and talk with customers and businesses on the level that you have, where it's oftentimes a very emotional or intuition driven conversation, and move the goalpost more to the binary situation so that you have the tools and resources to make effective marketing decisions? How do you navigate those kind of conversations?
I'm a bad example for this, like straight away. So as an agency owner, I'll quite happily have a conversation. And if it's not going to work out, and if I feel like I'm going to have to hit my head against the wall a lot, I'll happily walk away. And what that's resulted in is I've stayed a fairly small and boutique agency as it goes up and down, up and down. It's not a good secret to growth. I'll be completely honest here on the show. But the key thing to me is actually being transparent. And 90% of the companies I speak to, if they have an objective, we do a lot more on the social space and we do a lot on content space. If they have a goal and a KPI that we can actually write down together, it'll often be something like, I want to double my following. I want to get X number of people or whatever it might be. And when we get to those sorts of numbers that they ask us for, I'm like, that, right, cool. Let's look at how we've got this growth, how you've got to where you are so far, how you've got these numbers. And when you see that it's like slow, drip fed, not going, and then there's just this one spike, like one thing happens and they gained 5,000, 10,000 followers, whatever it might be. I'm like, that, you see this little bit here? These are the pieces of content that went out around that. This is what happened. This is what we have to replicate. You know, like success leaves clues is a something somebody told me years ago. And I've just always kind of gone back to that. And you're like, that, we don't have to come up with a new strategy and an idea. If you've got to 50,000 followers, there's a reason you got to that number. And you can start looking into those sort of things. And I think one of my hardest positioning for me anyway, and I'm not very good at this, like I said, is I will have the convo and go, I understand what you're saying. I appreciate what you'd like. However, what I'm telling you is if I give you what you like, you're going to blame me for not getting results. And then you're going to badmouth me in 6 months' time and say that I'm a bad agency when I've told you what we need to do is this or that or the other or change. You need to just try something different at least. Right? It's the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result. And I think that's something that's a real challenge, probably not just for me, probably for a lot of people. I'm just one of those people that much prefers to tell people to do one rather than actually keep them on board and then keep fighting and trying to find a way.
I think for me, and this might be useful for both of you guys, because it's very interesting that sort of like is the third wheel in this conversation today. In terms of like, I'm not an agency, right? But like tracking is still important. And so I find this whole conversation really interesting. Is oftentimes I'll try to act like a toddler, and it's like, okay, they'll tell me, someone will tell me what they want to do. And it's like, but why? Right. And then they tell you something that's pretty superfluous, right? But why? But why? I keep drilling down. You know, it's like
five whys.
Yeah. Well, one of my friends, Travis Cody, had this awesome exercise that he does when he's writing marketing copy. And I think the same thing can become true when you're trying to get someone from what they said they want to what they actually need and getting them to feel like it was their idea. So his strategy was basically a benefit table. So you write down, features, right? And then you write down the benefit. Okay, that for a lot of us, that's marketing 101, right? But what he does is then he goes away, goes for a walk, has a cup of coffee, and then he comes back. And in the next column, he writes the benefit of the benefit, right? And then he goes away, has a coffee, does another walk. Then he comes back and he writes the benefit of the benefit of the benefit. And when you do that, you can start to distill what your real motivations are, because I think a lot of times we sort of get enamored or in love with a thing that may or might not actually be in our best interest. And if we can continue distilling it down, suddenly we understand, oh, what we actually need is blah. So even if the conversation started from one goalpost, you can sort of stair step them along the way, the same way you would stair step a feature down to the core benefits. Like, why are they actually doing this? Why are they actually buying? And the same can often be said about their strategy, right? How do you distill that down to the real motivations? You want 50,000 new followers, or you want to double your open rate. Well, why do you want to double your open rate? Well, I want to get more clicks. Why do you want to get more clicks? I want to get more people to buy my thing or submit an affiliate, a CPA offer or buy an affiliate product. Okay, great. Now that we know that that's the goal, do you really care about people that don't open your emails? Like, can we segment down and just get rid of them because they aren't going to ever convert, right? And all of a sudden that becomes so clear when you can sort of tease down the funnel about what are you actually trying to get them to do. And it gets them removed emotionally from like, I need more openers. And it's like, okay, what you really need though is more people buying your crap. So if we can agree that that's the real goalpost, let's shortcut and cut out a lot of this other stuff that it would be easy to get lost on. At least that's my
approach. No, I agree. You get caught up on a tactic when the strategy, and it's not really aligned to the strategy, you just have decided it's going to help the strategy.
Because it sounds cool, right?
You know?
Yeah. You went to a conference, you heard about a cool thing worked for someone that may have entirely different goals than you for entirely different reasons, but it sounded cool and somehow they made a lot of money and you think, well, I should make a lot of money, a lot more money too. So maybe we should do the thing that worked for them, even though we're a different business with a different objective and a different product and different price point and different avatar. Everything else is different. So
that reminds me, April Dunford has a book, obviously awesome, that has a framework. Sounds like what your friend used, Travis.
Yeah, it's super useful. It sounds simple, but like just going through the process and sort of trusting it, it's amazed what your mind will come up with by the time it's the benefit of the benefit of the benefit, that it seems so in your face, duh. But when you sit there and you try to think about when you're reading the feature list, it feels like an impossible task to get there. But just sort of going through the motions, trusting the process, can really spit out an interesting solution sometimes.
I really enjoyed this conversation, gents, but I am going to wrap us up so that we don't keep everyone for too much longer. Scott, absolute pleasure to have you here on the show. Where can people find more about you, more about Wicked Reports? What can they do to get in touch with you if they've heard this and they want to speak to you?
Sure. Wickedreports.com. You know, we have live chat on the site. You can grab an on-demand demo if you want to learn more about the product. I'm available on LinkedIn. You'll have to figure out how to spell my name, maybe in the show notes. And that's where you can find me.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Thanks for coming on, Scott. It's always great to catch up with you.
Yeah, it was great. I really appreciate the time.